Hey, did you know that you can sign up for a free live interactive session with Jack Weston? These are trial sessions where you can get an amazing introduction to the car section and the MCAT as a whole. You'll break down a passage the way that Jack Weston wants you to break it down, and it'll blow you away at how simple the test can be. You can go sign up at jackweston.com. These trial sessions are offered every week. The MCAT Cars Podcast, session number 93. The car section of the MCAT gives thousands of pre-meds nightmares every night. Whether you're an ESL student, lack confidence while reading, or a slow reader like me, Jack Weston and the medical school headquarters are here to help you score higher in every section so you can be confident you're ready to get the MCAT score of your dreams. Welcome to the MCAT Cars Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week. As always, I'm joined by Jack Weston from jackweston.com, the premier MCAT cars master of all of the land. I get amazing messages from students from all over talking about the strategies and techniques that we teach you on this podcast and how they improve students' cars scores and MCAT scores overall. So I encourage you to follow along, pre-read what we're going to read, and then listen and see how you do. That's the only way that you will improve. I love that you're listening to these, but I want you to also work at doing these as well. Don't forget to go check out jackweston.com, where you can sign up for a free trial session of his MCAT course. Go check it out. Every week, every 2 weeks or so, he has a trial session. Again, jackweston.com. Click that big green trial session button right on top there. Let's go and jump in and say hello to Jack. Jack Weston back for some more MCAT Cars podcasts. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
How's that going? I'm doing great. Surviving. Ready to go outside with a mask on, of course, and and enjoy the world at some point, hopefully in the future. I'm excited to chat with you today, not only to go over a new passage, but to hear about this new course that you've created at jackweston.com.
Yes, I'd like to formally announce the Casper Strategy course with our podcast listeners. This is a course devoted to helping students overcome the Casper exam, which is a situational judgment test that most schools these days are using, at least the Canadian schools for the most part, and a good number of American schools, which basically test your interpersonal skills. And, you know, the Casper, the exam creators will say you can't prepare for it, but we know better.
You know better. And I'm gonna keep my stance. I've talked a lot about how you don't need to prepare for it. Again, different than you can't prepare for it. But I haven't played with your course yet. I'm excited to dive in and see the value in it. But I think if people have heard me talk about preparing for the Casper before, they'll be like, wait a minute, Dr. Gray, you've talked about not having a course. But I'm excited to see what you've come up with.
Yeah, I mean, look, we delved into what this test is because a lot of our students have asked, you know, what is Casper? How does it work? What do I need to do? And their goal is to really see who you are so that they know who they're accepting into their schools.
Yep.
And if you understand how the test works, it's basically they're going to give you prompts and they're going to ask you, what do you think about this prompt? And they'll ask you, you know, questions about the prompt, about the situation. They may even give you videos, right? And they'll ask you to respond to the video and by asking you questions about it. And they do all of this to really see how you react. Mm-hmm. And by seeing your initial reaction, they think that they can get a better idea of the kind of person you are, right? So I find that to be unfair because if you are the type of student that is very quick to think about a good response or very quick at typing, because ultimately typing quickly is very important, you're going to have a huge advantage. And you're going to come off as the more personal, more reliable, friendly kind of person who knows the codes of conduct and the, you know, what to do in when there's a conflict of interest, or, you know, all the things that they're going to try to assess you on. Mm. But if you've never been put in those situations, if you don't have those life experiences, but you still inherently are a good person, you may hesitate, or you just may not know how to address those situations in a quick manner. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the strategic point of view of our course, is helping you identify the different cases that may come up on the tests. And they could range in many different fields, right? And most of them are in terms of ethics. But our goal is to replicate the test for you and to pinpoint your weaknesses and address those before you take the test. Because as you know, Ryan, you know, your first impression is everything. And this test tries to capture your first impression. So why not prepare for your first impression and make sure that when schools are going to assess you on this exam, they have a good indication of where you are, who you are, what you believe, before, you know, you just jump into it and you know, just throw a Hail Mary basically and just give it your best go. Prepare, get ready for it. Be ready for the most difficult kinds of questions that they could throw at you, yeah. In my opinion. Now, you know, they say, you know, they're not going to really judge you on this, but why do they give you this test if they're not going to judge you on it, right? In my opinion, if it's a test, it can be beat. And you can prepare for it. And this course is phenomenal. I mean, our instructor for this course, Charlotte Williams, it has had 20 years of experience in teaching ethics. And I've worked with her side by side, making this course into something that any student can complete within 4 to 5 weeks. You can complete it in as little as 2 weeks, but we give you up to 9 weeks to complete it. And once you're done with it, you'll be given finals tests to really help you mimic the exact thing you're going to get. And we even have practice questions, practice tests, practice exams that look and feel just like the real thing in the course. So yeah, I'm excited to see how students react. Of course, we're going to keep making it better and better as we get more feedback, but I'm extremely pleased. And if I put my name on it, it's got to be really good. I want to make sure it helps students, it brings value to the community. And yeah, we're really proud of it.
Cool. Well, jackweston.com, where they can find all of that fun stuff you're doing with the CARS course and everything else as well.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right. What else are we diving into today with our passage?
This would be a fun article. It's one of those articles where if you know something about it, it's so easy to read. Mm. But if you don't know anything about it, you may be challenged. You may be thinking, I'm behind, I don't know, right? And that fear of missing out is what causes the problems. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're actually missing out on anything, because if you read carefully enough, you'll be able to pick up on everything the author wants you to know. Mm-hmm. I think the movie is really interesting. I enjoyed watching it when I was younger, and I think it's going to be a fun read.
Awesome. Alrighty. So again, as always, follow along in the show notes. You can pre-read. We recommend pre-reading the passage and then coming back and listening to us after. So let's go ahead and dive into our passage today. If there's one thing that Cher Horowitz, the heroine of 1990s teen movie classic Clueless, loves, it's a makeover. All right. Fun. Now I can see fun. Great movie, right? Clueless. Great movie from the 1990s. Unfortunately, all the youngins today probably haven't seen this, but I remember this one.
Right. So, see, did you see your initial reaction to it?
Yeah, fun.
You're like, oh, I can't wait. This is so great. Because if you've seen the movie, it's adorable. You know, it's really funny. It's really cool. And, you know, this is going to be a really interesting article on the movie. Mm. But if you've never seen the movie, if you have no idea or no clue, I should say, right, about what's going on here, you're going to be afraid of what's happening here, right? About what's about to be brought up. but that's okay. You know, just go with the flow, see where it's going. And I think you'll have enough information to be able to answer most of these questions. Mm. So go ahead.
All righty. Let's keep going. It's her main thrill in life, her best friend Dionne points out. It gives her a sense of control in a world full of chaos. All right, so just kind of explaining why Cher loves makeovers. Sense right. of control in a world full of chaos. It sounds like an opening opening to an action movie. In a world full of chaos.
Right. And makeover, if you've never seen the movie, you may not even know what that means, right? Mm. But hopefully it'll clear it up.
Yep. But as Cher plans the transformation of new friend Ty from grungy misfit to Beverly Hills princess, she is blissfully unaware that the person getting the real makeover in this movie is herself. Oh, a nice little plot twist there. All right. So again, just explaining the transformation and makeover, right? So potentially explaining what this makeover is, this transformation.
Well, let's be a little bit more specific, right? Who's actually getting the transformation?
Cher is.
Yeah. So yep. She's the one who's kind of recommending the transformation to her friend. Mm-hmm. But in the end, what the author is saying is she ends up getting the makeover. She ends up getting that transformation. Maybe not literally, but figuratively, right? Metaphorically in this case.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, next paragraph. Makeovers have long been a trope used by Hollywood to give films a clear narrative arc, especially in romantic comedies. All right, so now we're talking about movies as a whole and how Hollywood uses this makeover theme to give films a narrative arc.
Okay.
The plot device of a character's aesthetic overhaul helps to push the story forward and make a character seem more desirable, with their romantic lives often improved as a result. Okay, just explaining that narrative arc a little bit more, it seems like.
Yep, and it says aesthetic overhaul, so now it's really clear what a makeover is. Basically, you just, you know, redo their hair, makeup. You know, and most students would probably acknowledge and understand this, but in case you didn't, here you go, right? They're giving you the information that you need. And you can you visualize this. You can understand what this looks like. Okay.
But 25 years ago, clueless writer-director Amy Heckerling flipped the cliché journey on its head to deliver a witty critique of the consumerist, privileged lifestyle of Los Angeles teens. All right, so going back to the specific movie Clueless and what the writer director Amy Heckerling did to flip that arc a little bit.
Right, so it's showing the critique of this society. Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, next paragraph. The 1995 high school rom-com is in itself a makeover-ed property. Makeovered. It sounds like the author here saying the movie is about makeovers, but the movie itself is a makeover.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't read too much into this, but we are definitely still talking about makeovers, right? Yeah. And some kind of transformation. And it's you know, catching. So let's keep reading, see where it's going.
Heckerling had been asked to write a script by 20th Century Fox, which, side note, was just retired by Disney, about youth culture. She agreed, though Paramount would eventually produce it, but wanted to focus on the, unquote, the in crowd. All right, so just a little backstory of how the movie came to be.
Yeah, background, history. Okay. Yep.
In an interview for the original Clueless DVD release, she recalled how as she drafted a story about what could, quote, go wrong for a girl who always looks through rose-colored glasses, she realized she was writing a modern-day version of Jane Austen's Emma. All right, so again, more backstory of how Clueless came to be and kind of the inspiration for it.
Right. And I think this is a very important point. So it gives you more information into what the movie is about, What could go wrong for a girl who always looked through rose-colored glasses? What does rose-colored glasses actually mean or signify?
It's funny. I hate that term. But rose-colored glasses means like you're always looking for the good in things.
Yeah. Optimistic person, yeah. Right? If you think about what it means visually, you know, a rose in front of your glasses, roses are normally attributed to good, positive things. So you see things through quote-unquote roses, right? Okay. And then the second point I think is even more important, which is that it's similar to Jane Austen's Emma, right? Now, that's an argument. That's an opinion that we have to keep in mind, because maybe someone may go, well, no, it doesn't remind me of Jane Austen's Emma. It may remind me of something else, right? Or it may not remind me of anything for that matter. So in this case, the author thinks it's similar, or at least the director of the film, the writer, thinks it's similar to this older novel.
Yeah. But the going back to that first sentence, the makeovered property, is this where, to me, it's saying that the makeover is Jane Austen's Emma is being made over into what Clueless came to be.
Exactly. Exactly. So now it kind of all gets put together.
Yeah.
Right. It all makes sense now. What the heck did that first sentence mean? And you'll see a lot of students spend so much time trying to figure that out. But that first sentence is just a transition. Find a lot of times students overreact to transitional sentences. Keep reading, because eventually it'll clear it up. And you found it. But even if you didn't, so what? You know the points that really matter and the ones that they're going to test you on anyways.
Yeah. Alrighty. Next paragraph. Unconsciously, I had been writing an Emma character, Heckerling said, especially as she makeovers people all the time. All right. So again, the author here showing that comparison again to Jane Austen's Emma.
Okay.
She was very manipulative in a nice way. She lived in a fantasy of what could be for everybody else. I tried to take... Oh, stop there. So again, just the author explaining the characters in this movie.
Right. Now, it's not just in Jane Austen's Emma, but it's also in Clueless, right? Cher is sort of like this, of course. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I tried to take all the things that were in this pretty 1800s world and imagined what would that be like if it was Beverly Hills. Oh, man. I'm just trying to imagine people living in the 1800s picturing what we live like today going.
Right. Oh,
man. Okay. So again, just the backstory of how Clueless came to be and how it's this made over Jane Austen's Emma.
That's it. That's been sort of repeating, emphasized, probably the makeover, right? The transformation, the critique that we've been looking for. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. All right. Whew. Just as Emma Woodhouse takes the unrefined Harriet Smith under her wing, Alicia Silverstone's Queen Bee begins molding Brittany Murphy's New Kid Tie into her image. So again, just strengthening that bond between the two movies.
Right. But here's the problem. Who the heck is Alicia Silverstone?
Yep.
Right. So if you didn't watch the movie and you don't know who this person is, you're going to be a little worried. You're probably thinking, where does Alicia fall into all of this, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, we know she's the protagonist in the whole movie, right? She is Cher, right? That's the actual actor that plays Cher. Mm-hmm. But you could figure it out because it says molding Brittany Murphy's New Kid Tie. So Brittany Murphy is the actress behind Tie. And you can kind of see where this goes back to the first paragraph with the whole makeover of how Cher is trying to give a makeover to Ty. Okay?
Yep. Okay. All right. So now that we know our Hollywood actresses, we can keep going. In a quick montage scene, Ty's box-dyed hair is washed out, makeup applied, and her outfit overhauled to the tune of Jill Soboul's aptly satirical bop supermodel, so that she can become polished enough to sit with Cher and Dionne at the top of the social hierarchy. All right, so just giving a little bit of the plot behind what Clueless is and what this makeover comprised of.
Okay.
It's the sort of scene that appeals to audiences, says film studies lecturer Dr. Julia Wagner, because it panders to our aspirational appetites. Ooh, all right. That's a big final sentence there. So basically, this film studies lecturer is saying that scene, we like it because we as humans like to aspire to being at the top of the social hierarchy.
Right. Yeah, and that's cool. That's interesting. A very psychoanalytical kind of interpretation of the movie, right? Or of makeovers in general. Mm-hmm. But what's the point of the passage? What's the main idea?
Oh, the main idea, it seems like the majority of it is really how Clueless is a made over Jane Austen's Emma.
That's it. That's the point that you have to know. And if you know that, you're going to get most of the questions right. Because most questions revolve around the main idea. Now, should you know the little details that they brought up? Sure. I even think the last sentence is important, mm-hmm. right? But for the most part, that's it. And if you got lost and, oh, I don't know what Clueless is. I never watched it. I don't know who this person is or that person is. You're going to miss the point. You're gonna miss the point that will answer probably 4 out of the 6 questions. Right. So great. So yes, if you read this, if you've watched the movie, excuse me, you're going to probably read this in like 3-4 minutes. But if you haven't watched the movie, it might take you a little longer, and that's okay, because there are going to be some movies that you've watched that someone else hasn't eventually, or some book that you've read that someone else hasn't. And in reality, they're not going to test you on pop culture this way. So most of the articles, most of the topics that they're going to test you on are things that you've probably have never heard of, and neither have your peers.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talented in music or architecture or art, then I would say you do have a leg up, because most of the more challenging articles tend to come from those fields, especially philosophy. So if you have a philosophy background or an art background, or an art history background, I should say, you do have an advantage. But, you know, where you make up in cars, you may, you know, actually falter a little bit for the sciences, right? No one can be great at everything. So it's not a big deal.
All right, so there you have it. Another MCAT car session in the books. Again, don't forget to check out jackweston.com. Sign up for a trial session. Go check out and sign up for his free MCAT cars practice that he emails out every single day, and all the other amazing free resources that jackweston.com offers you. I hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT Cars Podcast.
This is MedEd Media.